Hello and welcome to Pro Money Talk. I am Jason Papier.
And I'm Peter Johnson.
And we have a really fun show today. Today we're going to be answering some questions from our listeners. One of those questions will be about the Fair Tax Initiative, and that's going to be a fun conversation.
Taxes is fun. That's a new concept.
In financial planning, we have different areas of strength and different areas of interest. I find taxation interesting, and I think I'm a little unusual in that. At any rate, please make sure to visit our website, www.promoneytalk.com, and while you're there, you can sign up for our email list or ask us a question.
We also welcome questions and success stories or people to interview about their successes with finances at promoneytalk@gmail.com.
Now, we'd like to start off by actually apologizing to our listeners for missing some shows or being a little bit uneven in our appearances.
Yeah, big time. We're just trying to get into the swing of a regular production schedule, and it can be hard. We were out of town 1 week. We had an interview that was wrapped up a couple of weeks ago, and we were expecting approval from the firm, the financial planning firm, within a day or two of the interview, and it took over a week for that to come back before we could post the show. So we're in here on a beautiful Sunday. We are definitely committed to doing the show, and we appreciate all the positive feedback we've gotten. We're going to continue to be here doing the show for a long time.
All right, now let's start off the show. Today's show was going to be responses to listener questions. And Peter, why don't you take one of those questions and let's start.
Well, we've heard from listener Gareth before, and he sent us some questions a few weeks ago, really thoughtful questions. And he asked us in an email, he said, I've heard of something called Fair Tax. What is Fair Tax, and is this proposal good for me? What is the likelihood of something like this ever getting signed into law? Frankly, I hadn't heard of Fair Tax. I think it's gotten a lot of radio play, a fair amount of media play. There's a book about it. It seems to be originating from the Georgia area with a talk show host and a congressman from Georgia. But it's a fascinating topic, and as we dig into it, we sort of wind up exploring the structure of the tax system as it stands today and how it might change, how it benefits certain people, how it directs the flows of investment and spending in our economy. So we thought it was probably worthy of an entire show.
Yeah, actually, the more we read and looked into it, the more interesting and the more layers we sort of uncovered. It certainly is worthy of its own show. Well, to jump right into it, what is this concept of the Fair Tax? If you hear somebody talking about the Fair Tax, they're talking about a national sales tax.
Right, and that would be in place as a replacement for the current income tax system.
That's right. Now, it is getting a lot of publicity, and there are about 600,000 people currently involved in this sort of Fair Tax push. As Peter said, mostly from the South and emanating from the Atlanta area. Let's talk about the Fair Tax, Peter, and educate our listeners in more detail about what the Fair Tax is, what are the arguments for the Fair Tax, what are the benefits of the Fair Tax, and then, of course, we'll talk about arguments against the Fair Tax. So, Peter, give me the pluses and minuses of this Fair Tax system.
Well, some of the pluses are that it eliminates complexity, the complexity of the current system, and would require a lot fewer people in the collection of tax money for the federal government.
How so?
Well, if you eliminate the IRS, you've eliminated a lot of jobs right there. Secondarily, if you eliminate the need for tax preparers, a lot of CPAs, enrolled agents, and other tax preparers, We know that it takes a lot of time to fill out the tax returns and to compute the taxes and all the planning that goes into it. So I couldn't find any reliable numbers, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was as many as 1 million people that are involved at some level in calculating and collecting income taxes.
Now, a state tax, I know it's not income tax, but it makes me think you're talking about enrolled agents and tax preparers, and you're talking about the IRS, a third group that's intimately involved with this, with our current income tax, are attorneys, estate planning attorneys. There's a lot of estate planning going on. Would that eliminate the need for the estate planning attorneys as well from a taxation standpoint?
Well, it's kind of a different question. Good question, though. I'm wondering if you kept the estate tax, and it's not clear whether we will or not, we're on the road to eliminating it by the year 2010, and then it comes back the following year. I believe the IRS is the agency that collects the estate tax as well, so you may still need the IRS if you kept the estate tax. But the idea is that if you had all those people not needed to do these complex calculations, then you would free them up to do something maybe more productive in the economy, which is definitely a plus. Taxing consumption rather than earning encourages people to work and to save because they're not being penalized in those areas. So all things equal, they would shift towards earning and saving, and they would probably spend less.
There are two pieces of that, earning and saving. When you say earning, the argument is that because you're not getting taxed on your earnings, there's no disincentive for you to work overtime or to work more.
You get to keep 100% of what you make, mm-hmm. So there's a greater reward for working.
Okay. And for savings, there's a greater reward for savings because there's a tax on what you buy and not a tax
on what you save.
Mm-hmm. So people would presumably spend less because that's what they're being taxed on and save more.
Mm-hmm. And presumably is a good word because nobody knows exactly how people would behave. But if they did save more on a macroeconomic level, that means that when they invest in the bank or they invest in bonds or stocks, they're actually increasing capital investment because the money that goes into those kinds of vehicles is plowed back into investment in businesses and commerce and other uses. So we might have, like in Asia and the Far East, some of the cultures over there, their culture is oriented towards saving, and that's some of the how they get some of the high growth rates because the money is being plowed back into investment.
What are some of the other benefits that we might see?
Well, I think a tax like this truly would be fair, although I like to joke and say that anytime you hear the word fair and tax in the same sentence, run for the hills because somebody's up to something, trying to sell you something. But it does seem fair in the sense that it is simple and it doesn't push people to, say, spend money one way over another. They would just, if they're going to spend it, they're going to be taxed on it.
Now, you say fair, but a lot of people feel that the poor and disadvantaged would have a burden under a consumption tax because they have to pay for food and the basics of living, and that may take up 100% of what they make versus a wealthier person that might only take up 20% of what they make and the other 80% is on fun items.
Discretionary types
discretionary
of items.
Thank you.
Well, let's back up a little bit and talk more about how the fair tax works. The calculation is that it would have to be a flat rate of about 23%, which is steeper than what we're used to in terms of a sales tax. But they also include something called a prebate. So at the beginning of every month or every quarter or some period of time, people would receive a check from the government, which would be in the amount of whatever the poverty level is. So if poverty level for a family of, two parents with a kid is $23,000, they get a check for that amount. So in essence, you wouldn't have a tax on poor people at all for the basic necessities.
So under this fair tax scenario, they're saying that the people under the poverty limit are not going to be taxed. They're going to be given money to offset the taxes that they are paying.
Right. So certainly this is a very complex tax, and there are a lot of ramifications and there are a lot of arguments pro and con, but it definitely seems to be because it's simple and something like the flat tax that Steve Forbes championed a few years ago, it applies equally across the board, which means that you have fewer distortions. Because if you think about it, if you change the tax system, you're not overall really changing the amount of goods and services available, except to the extent that it would free people up if they're able to now go to work rather than calculate tax. It just redistributes things. So you have to think about, well, if we have the same amount of goods and services, who's going to get them? How are prices going to change? So the costs of enforcement and compliance, too, would be a savings, probably about $110 billion a year, according to a Michigan professor. Obviously, you're going to have less consumption to some extent, and that might help conserve energy and oil. Interesting sort of side effects.
Now, this as a sales tax, first of all, they would repeal the estate tax. So there would be no what people call death tax. There no longer would be a separate Social Security tax. So what they, under this scenario, they're taking all the current federal taxes and rolling it into one tax system that is purely on consumption.
Right. Businesses wouldn't pay taxes. Products that are used in other products, there'd be no taxes on those business-to-business transactions. And I didn't read anything, but it seems logical by extension that the government wouldn't pay taxes. So in essence, consumers would be paying more for their consumption than the government. I don't know that for a fact.
Now, currently under state tax system, oftentimes capital items are taxed, but things like service items aren't taxed. No. Under the fair tax system, services would be taxed.
Right. And even things like rent would be taxed. So if you can imagine paying a 23% surplus on rent.
And what about things like doctor's visit? That's a service, so mm-hmm. we'd be taxed on doctor's visits and accountants and lawyers. Wow. And
so you get a million dollar bill from the hospital and there's a 23% tax on that. Ouch.
Right. So, and this, Peter, just to further explain, this doesn't replace any of the state taxes, correct?
Correct.
So there could still be the individual states could still have their own sales taxes as well as their own income tax.
They could. By the way, there are two bills that are in Congress.
All right.
For the fair tax. They both have the same number. We have H.R. 25 and Senate Bill 25 that were both introduced in January of 2005. I understand they are in committee, so they may emerge for votes or they may stay in committee. But at the same time, we have this, I don't want to get too far afield from pluses and minuses, mm-hmm. so we'll get back to it. But the president organized an advisory panel on tax reform, which is supposed to report back. It was going to be October 1st. Now it's November 1st
right.
to the president. And this is one of the types of tax reform that they are considering.
Interesting.
So we won't say it couldn't happen, even though changes this big don't happen very often.
And certainly not usually in one fell swoop.
Mm-hmm. Although this would be hard to gradually implement.
Right. So we were talking about pluses and minuses. Let's stick with the pluses. Are there other pluses on that you have?
Well, an obvious one for investors, I think, is that if more money is going into saving, that would be fantastic for stocks and bonds.
Interesting.
We could also see a higher level of production of products and of goods and services if people are rewarded for working and they work more hours. So there's no penalty anymore for working, although things by adding the tax on become more expensive to buy.
Now, sticking sort of on the positive side and kind of the pro arguments, let's say, who would come out ahead in this type of system? Who would be the winners?
Well, clearly savers would be winners because there'd be no tax on earnings from your investments. Workers would be winners because they're not taxed payroll earnings. People who would shop in other countries or travel abroad because there'd be no federal income tax on items you purchase abroad. People who own businesses would be helped because their businesses wouldn't be paying taxes. People who have low incomes. Currently, they may not pay any or much in taxes, but it's possible that they here they wouldn't pay any tax at all if their income is below the poverty level.
And while they don't pay income tax, they still do pay Social Security tax right now. So
that's true. So that's a big one.
That would be a plus. Let me ask you a question that I would be surprised if you had the answer for. But what is the likelihood? We're talking about the fair tax. And again, to recap, it's a sales tax. They're talking about 23%. It would replace all the other forms of federal taxation that exist right now. And it would only apply to consumers. It would also apply to services as well as products. Now, what is the likelihood, or where did they get the 23% number? I could certainly imagine it starting at 23% and depending on government spending go up or downward from there. But I just wonder how accurate the 23% is to begin with.
Well, you did get me there. They did look at it very carefully. I don't know if it would work out that way in practice, even if they had accurate numbers for the way things work now. In terms of spending, what if people spent less? Then they might have to increase it. Or, you know, if people's behavior changes, then I guess it's almost impossible to know exactly how it would work out. But 23% seems like a pretty reasonable number overall. I've heard numbers in the flat tax discussion of 17 or 18% covering things, and that didn't cover Social Security. So it would probably be close to the final number anyway.
Okay. And for our listeners, the flat tax, most of you will know, but the flat tax is a flat tax on income rather than...
Would be a specified percentage regardless of income level.
Right. So assuming that the 23% for now is accurate and transitioning into minuses and the arguments against a fair tax, one, you brought up a really interesting point, and that is that it seems logical that with more saving and less spending, there's going to be less production or at least less demand for goods. It follows from that, if there's less demand for goods, that would be potentially a negative on businesses and certainly on jobs. So if people are spending less and if potentially people are losing jobs, it would seem that you would need to make up that tax burden, and potentially you would have a higher tax burden because you'd be supporting more people.
In the past few years, after 2000, when the tech bubble burst, corporations stopped spending. The thing that carried the economy was the consumer. So it definitely could slow our economy down if consumers reduced their spending. On the other hand, if you have more people producing goods and services because they enjoy working and seeing the dollars pile up in their bank accounts, and you have maybe fewer people spending because that's where the tax is, maybe you have lower prices for goods and services, something that makes it, you know, keeps inflation under control to some extent. So you definitely are talking about a shift in the way people behave and the kinds of incentives that they have. And that's what our tax system is now. The reason I like the flat tax idea as opposed to I like the fair tax idea some too. The flat tax idea was that here's your flat rate and there are no deductions, period. So you're not... The government isn't trying to artificially steer people into certain behaviors. You can argue both ways, of course. You can say, well, we want people to give to victims of hurricane relief, so we have charitable deductions. Or we want people to be able to afford homes, so we give tax breaks on homes. More on that in a little bit. But on the other hand, the tax breaks for homes mean that it's cheaper for people to buy homes, so the prices actually go up higher. Everybody's competing. And the prices get bid up to the point where people are stretched and can afford what they can afford. So that's one of the things that would be negatively impacted if we change the tax system. If we treat everybody the same or change the tax system so that everybody's treated the same, there's no tax break for homeownership versus other purchases, home prices would probably decline vis-a-vis other kinds of goods. Because right now they're artificially high. So you have this one-time impact that would be very disruptive to current spending patterns, and it would hurt people, some people disproportionately.
Let's talk about, before we talk about who in particular might hurt disproportionately, let's talk more about the negatives. You've talked about home prices potentially going down. We've talked about the possibility of having to raise taxes because people are spending less. What are other negatives?
Well, anytime you have a provision in the tax code for a tax break, like charities, they may collect less. There aren't as many tax incentives as there used to be. There are fewer deductions. But we've spent time here in our practice converting people from IRAs to Roth IRAs, which, for those of you that don't know, is the practice of taking an IRA, moving it into a tax-free IRA called a Roth IRA, and you pay income taxes when you make the move, and what you get in return is future growth is all tax-free, and distributions are tax-free. So we had people, in the long run, we think they'll benefit from that kind of a move. In the short run, they paid the taxes already. If we dropped the income tax and went to a consumption tax, people who had IRAs that were never taxed, they would never be taxed. And the poor people who had made this conversion to a Roth IRA paid a big fat tax that they didn't have to pay if they'd waited. So we're going to be, you know, hunkering down, hiding somewhere, because we don't want to. It makes it difficult to plan too, and that's another thing. If you change the tax system at all, really, you're sending a message that you cannot plan for taxes, so don't even try. So it makes it difficult. It makes it difficult for people to plan, and in that case, they tend to do nothing.
I'd like to mention something from a cash flow perspective. Governments oftentimes have difficulty, whether it be a state government or a federal government, normalizing the amount of taxes that they receive. What I mean by that is when the economy is good, they may be getting a lot of tax money in. They're able to pay for their services. And typically, rather than saving some of that money, they start to increase the services that they can provide. Then, of course, we have some years where we're not bringing in as much money in taxes, and it makes it difficult, and we run deficits, and we have to cut services. And it's this constant up-and-down battle. Now, income tax and sales taxes have different cycles. They both have cycles, but they can be different. Or an obvious illustration of this is recently, when we were in a recession and unemployment was higher, income was down. Some people were making less, some people weren't working. So income was down, and yet consumer spending really carried the day, and that helped us with that recession. So consumer spending was still high, even though income was down. Now, states that rely on sales taxes did quite well, whereas states that relied on income taxes ran a deficit. There's also periods of time when the opposite's true, okay? When income is up, but people are saving and they're not spending a lot. So there's arguments at the state level quite often about what's a better tax. Is a sales tax better? Is an income tax better? And a lot of economists think that having a lower income tax and state tax, but having them both together is a better plan because it helps to normalize the receipts. So there are times when they're moving in the same direction. In other words, people are making more money and they're spending more money. But there are times, as I illustrated, when one's moving in one direction and one's moving in the other direction.
So if that applies to states, that would apply to the federal government.
That's right. And one of the things about the FAIR tax is that it hasn't been tried anywhere. So it's very difficult to say on a national level how well it would do. But I think we can get some inkling by looking at the states who practice sales taxes, some that practice sales taxes and income taxes, and some that just do one or the other, to get some idea of how a sales tax would affect people.
Of course, in the national arena, There are countries that charge a value-added tax, but it's usually in addition to the sales tax. To the income tax. So in Europe, for instance, they charge a sales tax at every level of production. So it's not just at the consumer level, but when businesses buy goods too. So that's called a VAT, V-A-T, value-added tax. It's on each level of sales. One of the minuses to revenue collection under the FAIR tax would be if people said, hey, I know an easy way to get out of paying this tax. I'm going to pretend like this expense was a business expense.
Oh.
You could see a lot of small businesses sprouting up across our country.
Sure. and possibly the barter system. Under income tax, you have to, if you barter for something, you need to account for that in income. And then, of course, there's talk of the black market, and that means buying things sort of off the books, if you will.
There's just so many aspects to a proposal like this that it's really hard, as you can see, to judge the final outcome of it, but it certainly is worth looking at. Our tax system is definitely unfair just because it's so complex. Every year, Money Magazine sends out a tax return or a tax facts information for a fictitious family of four. They send it out to 50 different tax preparers, and they always get 50 different answers back. I think this year they didn't get a single answer that matched what they thought the tax should be. So it's obviously too complicated, very time-consuming, very resource-consuming, makes it hard to comply even when people want to. So it is burdensome, it is complex, and it just seems to get more so. So there are definitely some good arguments for simplifying the whole mess.
And I have to be honest with the listeners and tell them my prejudice. I am a fan of a flat tax, and I am a fan of simplification. And in reading about the fair tax and learning more about the fair tax, it raises a lot of questions to me.
I think that's why we wanted to make a whole show out of the one question, because it does raise a lot of questions, and maybe we do need some answers to some of those questions.
So we've talked about the negatives. One that we didn't really talk too much about, but I've read a lot of people and talking about, and you might just chalk this up to overactive imaginations, but again, is the idea of a black market being created where people are selling milk on the street corners instead of through the grocery store, so you don't have to pay your 30% tax on milk. But I'll leave that up to everybody's imagination. We talked about the cons. Let's talk about what groups of people would lose in a fair tax scenario.
Well, I found a great article on about.com, which is a wonderful source for information on a variety of topics. And according to the arguments in the article, some of the folks that we usually like to protect might come out behind with a fair tax. One of the groups they mention there is that seniors might be hurt under a fair tax. Because they've already been taxed on everything they've earned, and they've got all these savings piled up now. And then they go out and they spend money and they get taxed again. So those people who, again, it's a transition type of a question, and whether it lasts the transition for a year of adjustment or 10 years or 20 or 30 years, there's going to be people who are going to be affected. So that seems quite unfair in that sense, because younger people would never be taxed on their earnings. They have more money to spend at the end.
Actually, I want to amend my earlier statement. This is sounding better and better, but let's continue.
I'm older, and I think it's sounding worse and worse.
Okay, who else would lose?
The same article mentions that poor people would lose to some extent, too, that they spend a larger proportion of their income on consumption, things that they absolutely have to have. Wealthy individuals have more discretionary income that they don't need to spend. So obviously there's this prebate that we talked about, which would be based on the size of the family and the poverty line. So there's some adjustment for it. But according to William Gale at the Brookings Institute, an economist, he thinks that under the fair tax proposal, taxes would rise for households in the bottom 90% of income distribution, while households in the top 1% would receive an average tax cut of $75,000. Don't know what that's all based on, but I didn't dig that deeply. I personally don't see this as a huge issue, because there is this give back. Under a flat tax system, by the way, usually there's some discussion of if your income isn't over a certain level, then you have no tax. And then once you get to that level, then you're taxed at the flat rate. Also, there's mention here that families might be adversely impacted under the fair tax because they get certain tax breaks for earned income credits, child care credits, and the like, tax breaks for the fact that you've got a family situation rather than one single deduction. So again, wherever there are tax breaks now and incentives, those are lost when you go to a tax that treats everybody the same.
I want to jump back a second. We were talking about earlier, much earlier, we were talking about Social Security and that the poor wouldn't have to pay that Social Security tax. Mm-hmm. It works the other way too. Right now, there is a cap on Social Security tax.
About $93,000.
About $93,000 is taxed at the Social Security tax level.
Which is, the rate is about 7% up to $93,000 for the employee and a similar amount for the employer.
Under this type of proposal, though, there is no cap. So it's pure sales tax. If you make $500,000 and spend $500,000, and you're spending $500,000 in the Social Security, which is included in this fair tax, is counted in that. So the argument was made just a second ago that the poor are hurt. That may be mitigated a little bit, and to a certain extent, the rich are pitching in a little bit more for the Social Security.
It seems to me that if you earned more than you had to spend, that you'd be very, very happy because you wouldn't be paying tax on that part of it. You could sock it away, let it grow tax-free for a number of years, and be that much better off later. So I think people would be working their fannies off to earn more under this proposal. So we would have probably higher levels of production.
And with no estate tax, you're not worried about making it and having it taken away at death. So there's certainly the idea of family continuity and leaving a legacy to your children and grandchildren.
Yeah, but you know who's hurt worse by this proposal?
No, who?
It's those poor folks at the IRS and income tax lawyers and tax preparers.
You know, that's not fair.
Nope, totally not fair to them at all.
This is a misnomer of the fair tax.
This is a miscarriage of justice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, the Retraining for IRS Employees Act would follow soon on the heels of the fair tax.
I'm certain, and I'm certain also that there's going to be quite a bit of opposition, as there are whenever there's talk of major change. There's always the people who are supporting it who, frankly, have something to gain, and there are people who are going to oppose it who have something to lose. And I always find it interesting to see who supports bills and who is opposed to bills. So who are the people behind the fair tax? Who are the people who are really pushing this forward?
Well, the plan was designed by a group calling themselves the Americans for Fair Taxation. As you mentioned, there's a grassroots network of about 500,000 people supporting the idea. It sounds great, you know. Gee, don't get, you know, no more April 15th nightmares and no more money taken out of your check. Boy, you're going to be richer and everything's going to be great.
Right.
And businesses won't be paying taxes, so they'll be able to produce things cheaper. And you'll have more money and things won't cost any more because they're going to be cheaper before the tax. And
sure.
As I said before, overall, you're going to start with people producing what they produce. And it's, everybody isn't going to get richer all at once by some magical feat of accounting.
Well, and that brings up a really good point, and we'll get back to who supports this and maybe who's against it in a second. But that brings up a really good point that we see over and over again, whether it be in investments, taxation, any area of finance, and that is that people are really looking for sort of that one thing that's going to make a big difference. And there certainly are things that make a big difference. You were talking about Roths, for instance. That Roths are great, especially in certain situations. And but there isn't sort of a magic pill. And the bottom line, my personal feeling, is that we need to pay. The government has to bring in a certain amount of money in taxes. We have to cover our spending. Well, you would think that we have to cover our spending, but for sake of argument, let's just say that we'd have to cover our spending. So the government has to bring in a certain amount of taxes. Now, whether that's in the form of an income tax, a sales tax, a value-added tax, a state tax, a property tax, or some combination of all these things, the government needs to bring in its money, and the government taxes people.
Whether it's corporations or individuals, whatever, it all does come out of our pockets one way or another.
Personally, when I look at anything like this quote-unquote fair tax or a flat tax, what I'm personally looking for isn't, you know, I'm always wary if there's an argument that it's going to save us a lot of money in taxes, because that doesn't seem to make sense. But what I'm personally looking for is efficiency, because I think through efficiency we can have gains. And I certainly there is a concept of fairness, and some things seem less fair than other things. But now let's get back to this. So the people who are supporting this are, I believe, the senator from Georgia.
Congressman John Lindner of Georgia, and also conservative radio host Neil Bortz. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. They're both based in Georgia, and Neil Bortz has about 4 million listeners to his radio show. So there's a fair amount of public discussion. There are the two bills in Congress. We have some links on the website, by the way, I should mention. One of them is fairtax.org, which describes the movement in general. There is a website called Thomas, thomas.loc.gov. That's at the Library of Congress. And that is a website where you can track the bills that are in Congress and see the full text of the bills, where they are in terms of actions and whether they're in committee or so on. There's also a link here to the tax reform panel that President Bush put together earlier this year, and a couple of articles about the fair tax. So check the show notes for a little bit more information there.
And again, you'll find those by going to www.promoneytalk.com, and you'll see our show notes.
And so this fair tax book, which is co-authored by Congressman Linder and Neil Bortz, the talk show host, has been a New York Times bestseller since it was published last August. So it's out on the radio, it's on the books, yeah, book lists. What a great book. I'd like to be earning the royalties off of that one.
Well, and I'm really thankful to our listeners for writing in and asking us questions. And I think this was a great topic, because I personally welcome any discussion about taxation, how to make it cleaner, how to make it more efficient. Certainly I'm all ears when it comes to quote-unquote fairness. So I really appreciate our listeners are participating. But also I appreciate, despite my misgivings maybe about the fair tax, I appreciate the discussion. Now, I have a question, Peter, and this is another question that's going to be difficult to answer. But how hard is it to actually make this a reality? I mean, what are we talking about the likelihood?
Well, my first gut reaction was fat chance, you know. In the 80s, President Reagan put a lot of political capital into trying to simplify the tax code, and it came out a lot more complicated. It was changed, and a lot of tax deductions and so on were taken away, but then the tax rates, there were fewer of them, but there were still progressive tax rates. So I thought that this really didn't stand much of a chance. Every time somebody's gone after our tax code, it's wound up, maybe nudging it or adding something to it and making it more complicated. But throwing out the original tax code, oh boy. You know, you've got all these special interest groups. Well, there's the insurance industry, too, with their special tax incentives. Very powerful industry. You've got the realtors, and you've got the whole housing industry, you've got all the people that support the family, and we've got to give families a tax break to encourage moral living.
That's right. And we've also got our aforementioned accountants, attorneys. So there's
and the attorneys certainly are active in law. I read that somewhere.
Yeah, I've heard that too. So there are a lot of people that would, if not stand to lose, maybe they perceive that they would stand to lose. And
so
there's going to
be a lot of very loud and squeaky voices in Washington if this becomes a serious consideration. So I at first would have said, no, not much chance. But over time, things do change. And 10 years ago, we wouldn't have thought that we could eliminate the estate tax, but that seems to be at least up for consideration. So we're going to keep a close eye on this discussion, and we're going to keep an eye on what the President's Advisory Panel on Tax Reform says when they come out on November 1st. This could have a huge impact on investments and the way people behave with money. So maybe it's a doubly good time to sell your house. If I'm just kidding.
Well, it's interesting because it certainly, again, adds more to it. It gives us more possibilities. Although they're presenting it as an all or nothing type of situation, it's not necessarily going to be, if it's ever implemented, it wouldn't necessarily be implemented that way. So certainly we could see some of the philosophy play out down the road, if not the system as it's presented. One of the things I would like to mention in terms of difficulty, besides our special interest groups that may oppose it, a couple things. First of all, eliminating the income tax would be very difficult, primarily because it's provided for in the Constitution. So we would, if you were truly to eliminate it rather than just put it down to zero but always have the threat of an income tax there, if we were really to say we're going to have no federal income tax, you're going to have to repeal the 16th Amendment, which would be pretty difficult. You need two-thirds vote or 38 states out of 50 states to vote for it. So that would be fairly difficult to repeal.
Well, you'd have to set up a whole new tax collection system, although in terms of efficiency, it would be more efficient to have a few centers, meaning businesses collecting the tax, rather than every individual calculating their own individual tax. So... yeah, but you'd still have to have some kind of government oversight and auditing of that tax collection function.
I think it would be pretty difficult to make this a reality as they're presenting it. But again, we very well could see the start of a discussion that leads to things in the future and bits and pieces being implemented.
Well, just in closing, I'd like to point out that the LA Times has an interesting article that went up October 8th. Tax reformers, eye breaks for housing. So apparently, with the huge budget shortfall in Washington, there's quite a bit of discussion about where to go to get the taxes. And they're looking at the homeowners' breaks and saying, gee whiz, we might have given them too many breaks. Maybe we shouldn't have home equity lines be tax deductible because, gosh, other forms of consumer debt aren't tax deductible. And in the beginning of the income tax, I guess mortgages weren't deductible anyway. Oh, excuse me. When the individual tax code was created in 1913, all types of interest were deductible. So it's been scaled back so that could continue. But this $250,000 tax break for individuals, $500,000 for couples that you can do every few years is pretty generous. So now there's more talk about the government's been a little too generous and it's draining money from their coffers, and maybe we need to look at it. In fact, some of the language in this article is just fascinating. Let me see if I can find an example of that.
And this is an article from the LA Times. Does the LA Times require a subscription to be able to view the articles? Do you know?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Maybe we can provide a link to that on our show notes as well.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea.
Okay.
So when Bush set up his advisory tax panel, he specifically charged the panel to take account of, quote, the importance of homeownership and charity in American society. So he was already lobbying for certain kinds of tax breaks before he even set them about the task. So it begins early. That led a lot of people to conclude that homeowner deductions were safe. The mother of all tax subsidies shall remain untouched, wrote economist and tax expert Martin Sullivan in Tax Notes. Good news for real estate agents, developers, home builders, contractors. But there has been growing discussion about changing it. And tax panel member Elizabeth Garrett said the money has to be found by either raising rates or changing tax expenditures. Tax expenditures are the government's term for money it foregoes because of targeted tax relief. The number of tax expenditures has risen from 67 to 146 since 1974, which is interesting because I thought tax breaks were reduced in the 80s and over time. The biggest tax expenditure, totaling more than $100 billion in various permutations, is to homeowners.
Well, this is another.
And here's this tax panel member, professor of law and politics at USC. He says, we privilege homeownership as a form of investment by a considerable amount. Quote, you always have to ask yourself, is preferential treatment justified? So when people are speaking publicly about goring this ox, this is a shift in the discussion, in the tone of the discussion. Others are wondering the same thing. The Joint Committee on Taxation last winter recommended repealing the deduction for home equity loans. And they're also talking about cutting the $1 million mortgage deductibility ceiling in half, which would raise $2.7 billion. Well, gosh, last time I checked, home prices were going up. Anyway, a sudden drop in the ceiling, quote, would reduce home values, mortgage lending, and home building at the top end of the housing markets. The solution is to phase it in gradually. In other words, there's going to be pain that's disproportionate, so just go slowly. It's just interesting that the tone of the discussion, kind of as a follow-on to the fair tax discussion, that it looks like because the government's running short of money that they're going to do some fairly radical things. And that may open the door to more radical conclusions.
I think it's interesting, the real estate thing's interesting. I would attribute that at least partially to what some countries refer to as the tall poppy syndrome, or what we, I'm trying to think of the saying that we have here, something about the, a nail sticking up needs to get hammered down. But the idea that there's been a lot of talk about how much money can be made in real estate. It's been such a hot market. You're starting to see books. You're seeing the thing. And again, you can go back to one of our previous shows where we talked about real estate and what real estate's doing and what we see for real estate in the future. But I think it's certainly bringing it to the forefront.
Yeah, where all these people are making money, the government says, oh, they've got money, so let's just take some of it back.
That's right.
You've called attention to it through the popularity and the success of the people. Well, yeah, that's another threat to housing prices for sure. It's things like that that could create a tipping point of where the preponderance of influencers or influences on those home prices begin to move in the wrong direction. Mm. Higher interest rates, and so on.
Well, again, that was a discussion that we had, not as it pertained to the fair tax or increased taxation, but it was a conversation that we had, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 shows ago. And for those who are interested, make sure to either go to our website or your podcatcher and listen to that earlier show.
So, again, thanks to Gareth for the question. I think we've gone on longer than our usual show today. Hope we haven't bored too many people.
Well, once again, thanks for listening to the show. And you can find the show notes at www.promoneytalk.com. You'll also be able to sign up for our email list there and ping us with any questions or comments that you have. Also, if you have questions or comments, you can go to promoneytalk@gmail.com. So thanks again for listening. I'm Jason Papier.
And I'm Peter Johnson.
And until next week, here's to your success.